Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Hidden Mysteries Radio. I'm Asmodor. My co-host Ghost is right here with me, and we're real glad you guys are joining us. Now, for those of you who have been listening to the show, the last four episodes that we put out, you know that we generally base our shows around a book or books that are sold here, and especially because Ghost is so heavy about it. He's very strict about wanting everything kept factual and cited, and of course, we respect him for that. It makes the show that much better. But tonight, we're going to do something a little bit different. I know you've probably seen the tagline on the Hidden Mysteries Radio website. It says, "Exploring the problems for solutions." And I'm not sure what solutions we're going to come up with tonight, but we're going to just explore some problems and maybe have a little bit of a free thought experiment here. And it's great to have as my co-host a man who is both formally and self-educated and is as educated and intelligent a person as I've ever met, and on a wide variety of topics. But most importantly, he's a free thinker. He keeps an open mind, and that is my co-host, Ghost. Say hello, Ghost.
I'm here. I'm ready to move on to the Age of Enlightenment. We need to have it restarted again.
All right. Well, maybe we'll succeed in enlightening a couple of souls here tonight. And you know, all we ask of our listeners, you tune in and listen to our show, we sure appreciate it. And we ask that you have an open mind, and let's explore some of these things together. Now, Ghost, you and I have talked a lot of times about September the 11th, 2001, and we've talked about it from a lot of, you know, different points of view than what's generally brought up, whether it's from a historical revisionist or a conspiracy theorist point of view, or just from somebody who believes the stock story given us to us by our State Department and our intelligence agencies as to what happened that day. And what I want to talk about starting off here is not the events themselves of 9/11, but you've said several times, and we've discussed it, that everything changed that day. And that's a real standard statement that people say all the time. But when we say everything changed that day, it's like the focus of people was moved from one thing into another. Could you expand on that for us?
Well, being in the business we're in, you know, we sell conspiracy books and books on current events, and a lot of the Age of Enlightenment books, and just, you know, in hundreds of spiritual type books. Because both of your Age of Enlightenment book came from spiritual leaders who did research into historical topics and reported the facts they found, not reported their beliefs. That's why I respect the Age of Enlightenment period for authors, instead of what we have now. Most of the time is very gobbledygook that they put together and never did a bit of research on any of their books. Many of the authors don't. Not ours. Ours do. But 9/11 was a turning point. We saw it in the type of books people wanted. Because prior to 9/11, people were searching the spiritual realm. They were searching the UFO realm to find out what spirituality meaning might be in there that they have overlooked, or what the spiritual terms coming from the Age of Enlightenment that they were trying to teach us were. The psychics, the spirit writing and spirit typewriting, for one, and the ghosts and the apparitions and the seances and the, not, I'd like to say witchcraft, but it was a white witchcraft of how the spells worked. And, you know, it was a whole world of people searching for spiritual truths, spiritual facts, doing spiritual research. You know, that didn't mean they were going to agree with everything they've read. That's just, it was a matter of knowing what went on before, so you know where to go now. But when 9/11 hit, those book sales just quit. It's automatic, and everybody wanted the conspiracy and the what happened at 9/11 and you know, we sold, you know, way too many of that type of book.
Well, survivalism,
like we went from the spiritual to the material world overnight.
Right, and survivalism and prepping type titles really started selling then too, right?
Yes, because we had the constant barrage of the apocalypse and the Armageddon and all that nonsense that goes on with every turn of the century at the same time. So nothing was the same after that as far as what the world and the people of the world, and I'm not talking about people all over the world, because we sold, you know, across the borders into the Australia and Europe and the England and all everywhere. And the whole thing changed. You know, back, I used to be David Icke's webmaster, and back when he was on the spiritual theme was right before this 9/11 thing happened, and people were eating it up and wanting to know more about what he had to say about it, whether they agreed with him or not. Then all of a sudden, after the 9/11, you couldn't sell one of his books hardly. Not in the United States, anyway. Anyway, we still sold some, but not like it was, because the whole world was wanting something different. And the whole world was sold a bill of goods that turned them from the spiritual, which I think scared somebody somewhere in the, either in the spirit world, the ether world, or the material world, that the whole world was looking at the spiritual concepts again, and it scared them, and had to do something quick to move us all back to the mindless dribble of wars and materialism, and beat up, who can beat up who. And so I guess the best thing for them to do was start a war on terrorism and go bomb to smithereens two different countries that had nothing to do with the terrorism.
Well, if I could interject a little something here, you know, from my end of it at the time, it really seems like around the turn of the century, a big tidal wave of anti-secrecy and, you know, anti-government secrecy type sentiment was really building. And, you know, you had things like throughout the 90s and the early 2000s and all, you had the Branch Davidian standoff, you had the Ruby Ridge thing, and there were several others. And then on top of that, towards the end of the century, of the 20th century, you had all kinds of things being declassified, that when it came to people who were into conspiracy theory and all, boy, they had a real motherload, because a lot of the MK Ultra stuff had been declassified, and there had been hearings in front of Congress at which victims who had been subjected to the awful physical, sexual, and psychic torture that they, and pharmaceutical torture that they put their test subjects through, many of them children, that stuff was all exposed. And it really started coming out, and even on the big paranormal and conspiracy radio shows and all, you were always hearing about things like the CIA's remote viewing program. And, you know, there were people who had been involved with those programs that enough time had lapsed that they could talk about it without fear of prosecution. A lot of documents were declassified. And when 9/11 happened, all of that type of sentiment and all the people looking into those rabbit holes, it really got swept under the rug, didn't it?
Oh, yes, they did. Think about this. Who in this world, or who in this ether world or spiritual world, would have enough control to usurp the entire spiritual being of a country like the United States and all its states, where everybody was doing a lot of research into the spiritual thing and people were returning to spiritual concepts, to usurp that spirituality and turn it into a bloody war? I mean, what was the last time you ever heard "onward Christian soldiers"? We turned a war against two innocent nations into the Crusades. I mean, it was totally absurd, and people were just falling over themselves, fawning themselves just to eat up his gobbledygook nonsense. And who more could be selected better to lead a charge than one of the dumbest people that ever sat in the office is George Bush Jr. I like old George as playing the Texas part with wearing his boots, even though he is a Yankee from Connecticut. But he wasn't the brightest, you know, there wasn't the brightest twig on the branch they could have picked. He was.
No, he wasn't. And the best thing that I can ever say about George W. Bush is that probably in my lifetime, and I'm nearly 50 years old, I think he really is the only one who truly in his heart believed every word that came out of his mouth. You know, he really believed in that stuff. But you know, it's easy to, you know, write him off that way, just as it's easy to love folly in a child, but we certainly don't need it in world leaders. And I think Bush really was a puppet. And you know, you asked who had the spiritual and other type of abilities to do that, to what, you know, my term for what I said is they turned the West, they turned Western civilization into just a mass of quivering, scared people, because
we've had no real, genuine statesman leaders since Nixon. I think Nixon had to be declared the last one that stood up as a statesman for the country rather than for his party.
Right.
You know, he did go down for his party.
But you did it.
That wasn't the point. And when he was president, he ended the war as he promised. I know it was a political move for make sure he got reelected, but he did do it. It you know, but it was still for the country. It wasn't for his party.
Right.
Well, and that's the last statesman we had as a general, honest, what call honest gentleman, I guess you'd say, that would have held that office, in my opinion.
Well, you know, but to get back to what we were saying, you asked the question, and I'm sure it sounded like a rhetorical question, but I'm pretty sure you have an answer. But let me answer the question from where I'm sitting, and then you can tell me if I'm right, or you can enlighten me as to what the answer is. The answer to who had the power to do this, I think, is, you know, it's basically a devil's triumvirate of big government and its surveillance state, big media, and international Zionists. That is the fear factory. Am I wrong on that, or am I leaving somebody out? Am I falsely accusing anybody?
You're not wrong, but you're not to say you're leaving somebody else out. Probably true, but you can't isolate it down to three particular points like that, because it'd be probably much greater than what we think. You know, that's just three tools in the cog of what, 56 maybe.
Well, right, but you know, those are,
that's what we see.
The problem is
what we don't see.
Those are the turds that you can see, that if you were just able to, you can tell where to put your boot down on.
There's no doubt they manipulated a lot of things, but they didn't do the usurping of the spiritual.
Well, yeah.
I don't think they would know how.
And I want to throw a couple of things out there and see if this, you know, kind of is along the vein of what you're talking about, usurping the spiritual. You know, things like UFO sightings. And there was another phenomenon going on at the time called shadow people. And there were just reports like crazy of these two phenomena. And truth be told, I had one single experience around this time with both things. And on another show, we're going to go into that. Ghost and I are going to talk about our own personal supernatural or paranormal experiences, which, like I say, mine are basically limited to two. But all that stuff dried up, and there was a big organized deal. There were organizations like MUFON and the Institute for Discovery Science and several others who had experts on the end of 800 numbers that if you saw a UFO, you could call them immediately and describe it to them, and they would tell you a few handy tools to where you know you could imagine, you know, like putting your hand up to the sky and the moon is in this aspect, to tell them how big was the thing, how far away was it, roughly how fast it was moving. And they would take down these reports, and they were keeping all that. And even people who were into that stuff just went the way of the dodo.
Yes, it did. And we're starting to see it return. This is one reason I like this show tonight, is we're starting to see the people return to the spiritual. And at the same time, we're hearing the bellowing for more war. The war in Ukraine, a war in Syria, a war in Iran, you know, on and on they go. They don't ever let us alone. They want a continual war to keep you out of that spiritual stuff. That's what the way I'm looking at it.
Okay.
But it's just now starting to return. People are buying the spiritual books again. People are looking into it, wanting these books during the Age of Enlightenment when they were written, wanting the original text, not some author 40 years later commenting on the original text. And you're seeing the struggle go on again between the people wanting the war and the people wanting the spiritual. And these people that want the war is usually the people that have the money. Now, I don't think they sit around in a big room and discuss how to do this. But I think they're tools and pawns in a game that's not even a bigger game than they even know. You know, I'm not much of a religious person when it comes to Christianity or the New Testament. But we were warned of powers and how do you say that?
Powers and principalities.
Not seen. And that's, and I do think that's probably true, because when you start thinking about the UFO business, what could be mother, that's a power and a principality that we don't normally see. And they could be down in there. They could be doing some of this manipulating of mankind, too.
Well, you mean like, kind of like a They Live scenario?
Well, They Live, which that's probably a little more covert than They Live. But the They Live is a wonderful movie about how an alien race could actually take over our world and subliminally deep reprogram everybody on the face of the earth. And don't think we're not being subliminally programmed. Anytime you go to the internet, you're being subliminally programmed. Anytime you get on the highway and see those highway signs, you're being programmed. Anytime you go to the Walmart, you're being programmed with all the signs and goodies they're showing. And they're always wanting you to buy something you don't really need.
Well, you know, most of They Live was, and it's brilliant. I think it's by far Carpenter's best movie. And it may be the best movie that came out that decade. Who knows? You know, all a matter of taste, I suppose. But it was full of very simple but very powerful symbolism about this type of manipulation. Now, you know, the main character's name is Nada, you know, nobody. And when he finds the special sunglasses, that you put those sunglasses on and you see reality instead of, because it blocks the signal that these aliens are broadcasting directly into your subconscious, you put them on and the magazines say consume, and the billboards say get married, have children, and the people on the news are saying be afraid, obey, trust the government, you know, and just on and on with these simple messages. And anyone with the slightest bit of imagination can look around them, I think, and see this happening now.
Yeah, there's another biblical term about picking up the sword of righteousness to fight that stuff, too.
Yeah.
And,
well,
people don't realize it. If you go back to Greek, you probably find it in the plain old Webster dictionary, all righteousness means is truth. You pick up the sword of truth, they're not talking about sword like slay people with, like it gets interpreted by the dingleberries that call themselves preachers nowadays. You just pick up the sword of truth and divide it, and, you know, what's right and what's wrong. And people don't seem to be able to even try to do that anymore.
Well,
you know, when I saw that war thing going, that's the first thing I did was, wait a minute. This is all going down way too fast to be normal. I mean, look how long it took us to get into World War II. And yet we're going to jump in this, and we're going to fight two nations and not even declare war on them. And we don't even know that they're not even involved in it.
Well, we haven't actually...
The whole world said, let's go join the army.
We haven't actually properly... or I guess I should say constitutionally declared war since World War II. So
we haven't had a constitution, a war. I don't know if we've ever really had a constitutional war, constitutionally approved type war. You know, I know they, World War I and World War II, the only ones I can think of, they actually declared. And they did that after the fact.
Well, we're a little bit overdue for our first break. So we will continue expanding on this theme when we come back.
The liberty of Texas is under assault. The American Constitution has been shredded. The 10th Amendment has been forgotten. The meaning of freedom has been perverted. Washington's values and the values of Texans are opposites. Texans are victims of tyranny not seen since Santa Anna. Obamacare, oppressive taxation, porous borders, more socialism, and firearm restrictions. Sam Houston said, Texas will again lift his head and stand among the nations. It's time for Texas to be free. Texas independence now. The Texas Nationalist Movement.
Are you an unpublished author? You can get your manuscript published at incredibly low prices. TGS Publishing is the largest print-on-demand publisher in Texas. Visit tgspublishing.com for more details. Order as few as 50 copies of your book and keep your capital for marketing. TGS Publishers can get your literary work into print and published. TGSPublishing.com.
We're back. Now, when we left, we were talking about several variations on a theme, and we were talking about how the wars were declared, and that, you know, maybe one of the things that really changed things about 9/11 is that before 9/11 happened, people were starting to have free time, and like you said during the break, before World War II, they were beginning to have a lot of free time. And it seems that the powers that be, both the powers that we know and the powers that we don't see, that we suspect, that none of them like for a free people to have free time. And I think personally, one of these reasons is when you have free time, there are so many things you can do that are detrimental to the program that they have, the mind space that they want to keep you in. I remember when I was very young, before I was even 20, I spent a few months living in a cabin way out in the woods in northeast Texas, not far from Overton. And I had a lot of free time, and there were a lot of books there. And there were so many concepts that, had I never been introduced to them, you know, my life would be so much different now. My outlook would be so much different now. I remember reading Illusions by Richard Bach, and, you know, Johnny Got His Gun by Dalton Trumbo. Those were really life-changing books at the things that they made you think about. And there were many others. I didn't read Nietzsche in school. I first read Nietzsche when I had free time. And that you can just go on and on about this, that they really don't want you to have time to look at alternative concepts, alternative spirituality, alternative ways for us to govern our own lives and to set up governments that better suit us, do they?
Well, I was thinking, you know, prior to World War II, take Henry Ford, for example. The Depression was there. Everybody had a lot of extra time on their hands. Nobody had any jobs, hardly. They were dirt poor. Reading in the library were free, and that's what a lot of people did to fill in the void, to make it pleasurable time for them. And Henry Ford just had his business decimated by the Depression. Now, it wasn't totally ransacked by the Depression, but it was decimated from what it was prior to it. So he had a little bit of time, but he was more interested in what caused that depression to destroy his business like that way. And he went into studying, and he studied the spiritual, the material, and the all different angles of it about what caused that depression and what caused his business to hurt like it did, and all his employees that he lost, and they hurt their families. And that's exactly what happened at 9/11, the same sort of scenario. We had people studying and learning, and immediately after it started a war, everybody's turned their attitude or their attention to something different other than their studies. And off they went on a rabbit trail for another decade, chasing an idiot war that should never have happened in the first place. And then basically we did the same thing in World War II. It was an idiot war that never should have happened in the first place. We were not involved. It was not our war. And Henry Ford understood that. He really did. And he went after it. He went after the people that were destroying the hemp industry in this country, because he knew that was the solution to our problems. And yet the people that knew it was a solution were the ones done to destroy it to just protect their own little corner of the world.
Well, yeah, William Randolph Hearst was the biggest villain there, because the big push to outlaw both cannabis and the, you know, its sister plant hemp that we make rope, paracord, all kinds of clothing, all kinds of things from before it was outlawed to, you know, to be grown agriculturally in the United States. A gentleman, and I can't remember his name right off the bat, but an inventor came up with a way to separate the hurds, H-U-R-D-S, which is the grainy, chaffy substance in the hemp stalk, from the fibers themselves, and came up with a renewable resource to make paper out of. And now a person like William Randolph Hearst was completely opposed to that, because he had the most unbelievably tightly sewed up monopoly. He not only owned the whole network of newspapers. You know, he owned the biggest newspapers in most every city, and if it wasn't the biggest, then he had the second biggest.
Henry Ford said that he would never cut down a tree.
Right.
If he had hemp.
Right.
Because he developed a car. The body was made out of hemp, some kind of a epoxy made out of hemp, and he took it to a World's Fair, took an axe to it. You couldn't even break it with an axe.
Right. Well, you know, Hearst not only owned all those newspapers, he owned
the
millions of acres
Canada.
Of forest. He owned the wood mills, the pulp mills, and the paper manufacturing. So, you know, he had the whole thing sewed up. And when this guy invented the simple device to separate the herds from the fiber, to make it so easy to make paper and many other products out of hemp that hadn't been made from hemp before, that's when the big push, it was really serendipitous for them, because it was the end of alcohol prohibition, and Ford and Harry Anslinger, who had run the Office of Prohibition, Hearst and Harry Anslinger, who had run the Office of Prohibition, both needed bugaboo so that Hearst could keep his monopoly and Anslinger could keep his power and prestige and cushy job.
Anslinger was the George Bush Jr. of that era.
Yeah.
He was the most illiterate piece of slob that could ever be put into an office of authority.
Right. And most of the myths about marijuana, whether it's recreational marijuana or medical marijuana, that persist to this day, were made up out of whole cloth by Anslinger himself, and they were all based on the ridiculous alcohol prohibition propaganda.
And your tax dollar got to pay for all that.
Well, and the interesting thing is, you know, that that was close to the end of a cycle where so much was changing that had begun in 1912, 1913 with the push for the income tax and the Federal Reserve Bill. And, you know,
you think of all the products they've outlawed you from owning and buying and producing.
Well, yeah, but
since 1940, when the beginning of World War II.
It's
unbelievable.
Yeah, but the point that I was so rustily and unprofessionally trying to get to there was that when they outlawed alcohol prohibition, there was still enough of a sense of duty to the Constitution that they realized they had to pass an amendment to the Constitution, because the Constitution itself did not authorize outlawing a substance. So they passed the amendment, they outlawed it, and when they decided to reinstate legal alcohol, they had to pass another amendment. And the same man who ran that alcohol prohibition turned right around and convinced Congress that they didn't need a constitutional amendment to do what they had just needed a constitutional amendment to do. All they needed was just a simple act of Congress, and boy, has it been on ever since.
Oh, and every time they pass one of these laws to protect us all, it's us all that pay the price.
Sure.
You know, they want to protect us from the poor little druggies that have to go down to the local store, buy up all the Excedrin so they can get their high for the day, so they're going to make it. You have to go to the pharmacy window to get your over-the-counter prescription
and show,
unprescribed drug.
And show ID and have a record generated.
No, just, it's the most unbelievable.
Just because you buy
Big Brother crap that we've ever seen.
Just, yep.
And all this, think about it now, a lot of this has been brought on since 9/11, but a lot of this was before 9/11 too, because we went through a war with Yugoslavia, went through a war with Panama, and another war with Iraq. And it just an endless war since World War II.
Well, you know, every time this beast sheds its scales, it comes back as a more deadly reptile with a different pattern to its skin. Before 9/11, the main tool that the fear factory operated on was the drug war. I mean, I'm sure you remember the famous press conference that Daddy Bush had, where he held up this bag that had these giant crack rocks in it and said, you know, this has gone too far. These crack rocks were, you know, that are as big as watermelons, were confiscated off an individual not two blocks from this White House. And you know, they had the real fear going on that. And then it kind of morphed into this fear of constitutional militias and separatist movements. And then, boom, we see on TV a couple of planes hit a couple of towers, And miraculously, three towers fall, and then we saw a hole in the side of the Pentagon with no evidence that there was ever a plane involved whatsoever. And the beast was on steroids, and it became the war on terror. And all the other wars got wrapped up into it. And that's what makes it so muscular. The war on drugs immediately became about the war on terror. All the Just Say No commercials from the Partnership for Drug-Free America became commercials about, don't buy pot, kids, whether it's harmless or not. You're financing terrorism. And the militia groups and the separatist groups that had been maligned and attacked for so long now got wrapped under up and placed under the umbrella of the war on terror. And you have, to this day, these federal fusion centers dotted all across the United States that generate things like the MIAC report that don't even mention Islamic terror groups, but mention things like returning veterans or people who quote the Constitution as being the real threat to our national security. And I mean, you got any thoughts on that? Do you see it the way I see it?
Well, yeah, to a large degree. It's like I said, but it's everybody's turned their attitude toward the material side of this crap rather than paying attention to what they should have stayed with, was their spiritual side. You got to look at it. We're looking at this in retrospect, and it's always a lot easier to do it that way. When you're in the big middle of it, you know, we all have our, you know, that time we were sat there with our mouths open aghast at the Twin Towers came falling down like dominoes, but then you start thinking after a week or two that they sure fell down awful easy, didn't they? Wow, they must not have been built that well. You know, just on and on, we got it. We held our, you know, mouths up wide open in a gas. They even said the whole internet shook the day it happened. And then rightfully, we should be aghast at something like that. But what we didn't stay aware of was what the people who's got the boots on the ground doing something somewhere, deciding we're going to go into a war for two countries that weren't even involved in the terrorist acts, didn't have one citizen of theirs involved in the terrorist acts, were against those terrorist acts. You know, we went into Afghanistan because Cheney told the Taliban we were months before this ever happened, before we ever started the terrorism war, because he wanted an oil route there that the Russians couldn't get. And the Russians couldn't get it, they weren't going to let him have it either.
Well, yeah, that's been a problem as well. And especially the neoconservatives and neoliberals, which are, you know, they're basically the same thing. I mean, if you can really tell a policy difference between Hillary Clinton and Dick Cheney, you know, I don't know what it is. They have a lot of rhetorical differences, but they're both basically the same neo crap. And those are the people who have really had a stranglehold on American foreign policy ever since. And they're the ones who were really struggling to keep the narrative of the Cold War alive, even though, you know, Russia was no longer, there was no Soviet Union anymore. You had Russia and the various satellite republics that all gone their own way. And they were all, you know, struggling to set up, open capitalist markets. You know, they had a lot of trouble with their gangs and organized crime and trying to sort that stuff out. But the Cold War really ended the day that the Berlin Wall came down. And I believe the Berlin Wall coming down had a lot to do with the panic that set in with the neocons. And that's where this multi-war strategy that the Project for a New American Century, which was peopled by all the usual suspects.
Tel Aviv Incorporated?
Yeah, Pearl, Cheney, Wolfowitz, you know, on and on. And they realized that they were not going to be able to continue to milk this huge military-industrial complex combined with the ever-growing surveillance state. They weren't going to be able to justify that stuff on the Cold War rhetoric alone. And they had the plans for these wars, you know, years before any type of event happened that justified it. And as a matter of fact, the Patriot Act itself was written long before George W. Bush took office, but nobody ever saw an opportunity. You know, as Rahm Emanuel liked to put it, never let a good disaster go to waste. They didn't have a good enough disaster to slip that Patriot Act in on us. And, you know, 9/11 was really the opening of Pandora's box for all the dystopian things that we've been warned about in books like 1984 and Brave New World, as well as movies like THX 1198, I think it's the number, or 1193, the famous George Lucas 1984 type movie.
Well, 9/11 was our Reichstag to our spiritual learning and our studies and our research.
Right.
And that's the whole point of what we were trying to say tonight, was this whole world shifted that day out of their studies and what they were trying to learn, what they're trying to achieve in their private and spiritual sides, into a material side, and whether it was against the war or for the war wouldn't matter. It's, you're still shifting your attention away. And that attention has been shifted away, and now it's starting to return, because we see it in our sales, what people are wanting to buy and what they're reading. But they're, you see the same grumbling again going on for more wars. You know, even how many people woke up when Reagan had his war? Remember his war? We didn't even know a place there was. We didn't know there was a place called Grenada. All of a sudden, we conquered it.
Yeah, that was an odd one. I was a junior in high school when that happened, and the night, you know, it happened overnight. And the night that it happened, I had no idea. I went to school the next day, and one of the teachers says, "Hey, what about Grenada?" And all of a sudden, all the guys in my class were lifting their fists, going "Hoo, hoo, hoo, hoo!" And I thought, "What are they talking about?" And that was the first time that I ever saw this, what I call the brain dead type of patriotism, where, you know, somebody gets up and they wave a flag and holler "America," and everybody goes "Hoo, hoo, hoo, hoo!" and pumps their fists. And it really is a brain dead thing. But we're overdue for our second break, so we're going to take that break, and when we come back, I want to focus on exploring more in depth what the spiritual aspect of the was that was going on, what it was that people were studying, what you, Ghost, think that people need to pick back up on, and we'll do that right after this.
Just keeping it Texas on RFT. Just keeping it Texas the way it ought to be. As Texas as chili and barbecue. Keeping it real for me and you. Just keeping it Texas on RFT. Radio Free Texas. Where you wanna be. RadioFreeTexas.org, bringing Texas to the world.
Truth seekers and freedom loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard to locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge based selection on the internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
On the other side of the break, we had started talking about the spiritual search that so many people were on before 9/11. And Ghost, you had mentioned that although people had been, you know, misdirected away from the path, that people are definitely starting to study spirituality again. Have you seen an uptick in book sales on spiritual and paranormal topics?
Well, yes, I've seen a leaning back towards those topics in the. And when I say that spiritual, I mean, there's a lot of research that's not really technically spiritual, but it's background or facts and details for your spiritual research. Because when I study my ancient history, and I love ancient history and the Sumerian realm and all that stuff, and the Hindus and the Vishnu and the, all the flying critters they had in the Mahabharata. But it's a spiritual quest because I want to know the truth. And that is my spiritual quest, is to simply know the truth. I don't care what the school teachers say. I don't care what George Bush say. I don't care what the History Channel tells me. I want to know the truth for myself. And I don't think I'll get it from today's modern systems. I think you're going to find it in the books written during the Age of Enlightenment for the most part. And you can put together the things they've learned since then and come up with your own judgment of what's a better line of history than you're going to get from these other sources.
Well, sure. And you may or may not agree with me on this, but just about every form of religion or spirituality has some sort of truth at its core if you search for the real thing. You know, Christianity is a good example. But I think that one of the bigger problems that we have today is that most of the churches, when I say most, I mean probably 99% of the churches, especially in the West, are operating on basically state-approved doctrines. And it's all very shallow, isn't it?
All modern Christianity is very, very shallow. If you bother to read the Christian masters like Joseph Ruchlin or Emanuel Swedenborg, if you get into reading their works, you're going to understand just how shallow your modern Christianity is, because those people lived it, studied it, learned it, and found the truth for themselves, and then left it in writing for us here in the following generations.
Sure.
I mean, there's nothing I've read that's better than what Emanuel Swedenborg had to write, and I don't agree with everything he found out. For some of that stuff, he found out for himself. He didn't find it for me. I don't have to go along with everything he did, but the reading is so deep compared to what you're going to find today on the TV by the televangelists, and it's so deep compared and so well learned from a educational point, a higher educational point of view, than you're going to get from any preacher in the pulpit, because they're trained by the same people that train their fathers, and it's all gone to pot because they don't really study anymore and learn for themselves. You know, they don't learn the Greek and how to do it. They just learn what the people that used to know it told them about it.
Right. Well, do you think this is something that has occurred entirely organically, or perhaps there are puppet masters in the background who've directed this?
I think they're puppet masters in the principalities, and the unseen sort of thing, that have directed this whole thing, this whole scenario, and they keep directing it. Because there's no reason that we're in a constant war. I mean, we're in a constant war. If we're not in an actual war, we're in one threatening a war. You know, even when, remember back when Clinton, when he wasn't in actual war, he's bombing Saddam's milk factories.
Well, sure, and he was starving about a million Iraqis to death with sanctions.
But the whole point is it's not necessary, that we don't have to follow that path. Every time they wanted to bang the war drums, we can all put our voices together and say no if we want to say no, or just ignore them and go on with our studies. And that would scare them more than anything if you just went on, continue on with your studies, let them know their plan ain't working anymore.
What is it about studying spirituality that scares the living daylights out of these hidden puppet masters?
They're afraid we're going to discover the actual facts and truth of what humanity was put here for, why we're here, and we're not all here for the same reason. We're not all here from the same source, but we're going to find out what we're doing here and what's going to be the end game. And it's been written down for us. We just have to find them.
Well, and
we will find them. One of us will find them, and we'll share it with the others. That's the whole point.
When we find that kind of stuff out, we'd also be really likely to know who these puppet masters are and what their game is. And I doubt they'd like that either, would they?
Well, I think the game is outlined very well in some of the old religions. If you look into the, I would call it historic Christianity or historic Judaism or historic Catholicism, the game was laid out for us. We know the game as far as what the plan is to keep us away from the spiritual side of things. That's one reason our wives are having to work, and we have to have two income households now. It was all to keep us away from the spiritual side, because of, technically, if you go to ancient Judaism, the woman was the spiritual side of things, and the man had to go to the and learn it. She was born with it. That was their view on it. But we've lost all that. We have lost it totally, and we've allowed this government that's ruling over us to keep oppressing us and keep us down where we can no longer have the time to study and do our spiritual side of things in this lifetime. We're only here a scant 80, 90 years, you know, and it's not enough time to sit here and belly and go to war with every country that we learned about in high school in that scant 80 years. You know, it's just ridiculous. We have to do that.
And what have we traded our freedom for? It seems that there is such a hardcore of, I don't know if you call them drones or pod people, but, you know, just the basically this intellectual and spiritual walking dead in our societies, who, so long as they have an iPhone or two and, you know, plenty of cheap light beer and some type of sports extravaganza on their super big flat screen HD TV, they're willing to swallow whatever poison pablum is put out there for them, aren't they?
They are, and we're creating a generation or two now, maybe, of some of the most mindless subjects on the face of the earth. They're going to be subjects. They're not going to be citizens. They're going to be subjects. Citizens can think for themselves. They know when to put the phone down and pay attention to the road. They know when that texting and, you know, when you're having company is not a cool thing to do. They have, you know, a certain thing called manners. But we're in a, like you said, a drone society, the pod people, and they've got two generations of them, I think, now that they cannot live without that little machine in their hand. And I'm still at the top. I don't even like the phones ringing at my dinner time.
Yeah. Well, I have one, and I like it. And the main reason that I have a smartphone is, you know, because people who have followed the stuff that we do before we started this know that, you know, for quite a while there, we were in the local government game, and I like to have something to where when I was filming the police or filming an interaction with government officials that I could live stream it, so that if my phone was taken from me, there'd still be video. But one thing that
you're talking about using a tool for what it was intended
I refuse.
Not being a subject to the tool.
Right. I absolutely refuse to, you know, I don't ever put the Twitter app on my phone, because if I'm out eating with somebody, you know, the only status that I'm interested in checking while I'm out with a human being is the status of that person sitting across the table from me. As much as I really love my friends on Twitter, and I have a lot of them and they're really good friends, I'm not real interested in whatever the last thing they had to say on Twitter was when I'm with a live human being. But that truly is just the picture of our society. You can walk up any city street, and there are people who they're out there in the real world living life, and they're completely oblivious to it because all they're worried about is what's going on that cell phone.
You know, I cannot picture a world that doesn't have books in it, because, and you've seen the science fiction stories, especially I remember one, Twilight Zone, where the books were almost banned, and to have a book was a heresy, because we're heading that way with the Kindle stuff. That type of technology is there to take control of your reading.
Right.
You're not going to be able to buy it, to read what you want to at a library. You're going to read what's available through a Kindle company type setup. I'm not saying Amazon is this type, but they will determine what you can read and what you can download, and it will be, you won't buy the book anymore. You're going to rent it. And you'll rent it for 30 days or 45 days. And once that 45 days is up, your book is gone. They pull it right out of your Kindle.
Oh, I can attest to that. I got one of the original Kindle Fires for Christmas a couple of years ago. And when I decided not to renew the Amazon Prime agreement that I had, the books that I had downloaded through that agreement, they went into my tablet and took them out. But not to get too far afield on this stuff, I think we made our point there. What do we need to do what does the person who's out there listening need to do to get on a path, not even necessarily a path that's right for you or right for me, to get on a path for themselves? What do they need to be looking at? And, you know, what are perhaps a couple of small changes that they could make to their method of ingesting information that could really set them on a path to self-awareness, spiritual awareness, and political awareness, the type of which the puppet masters don't want?
Well, number one, everybody has its own interest, and the path is not going to be the same for everybody. The interest is not going to be the same for everybody. Your likes are not going to be the same. But whatever you like to study, or you like to think on, or if you like to, some people like to study Atlantis, other the Lemuria, me as ancient cultures. Other people might want to see what the Tibetans are doing, or you might want to study Buddha or Hinduism. You know, whatever interests you is where you need to start. And you need to start with finding the books and the authors written that are the masters at it, so you don't waste your time. Don't read something that's new on it. Go back and read the older books so you don't waste your time on the new stuff. Only thing you can pull out of the new ones is what's been discovered since then. But you're going to lose so much of the old stuff that the new in the new writings that it's almost a blasphemy to even consider it. The topic is complete. But like I say, I choose the Age of Enlightenment because I think it's the, for some reason, the powers, that the principalities that's causing all the trouble now were not in control then. We had way much more free time in the 1800s for people to study, go to the libraries and dig up all this research and travel around the world, go to the pyramids, go to the Himalayas, or go to the Peru and explore, that we're not able to. All we do is get to sit back and look at what they did. But that's where you want to start, is with the people that actually did it, not people that are talking about it. You know, that's one thing I don't, you know, a lot of people don't like Mormonism. I'm not fond of the religion myself. I don't follow it, don't care about it. But I do respect Joseph Smith, because when he started studying the pyramids, he didn't go read somebody else's work on it. He went there. And then started, and I'm sure he studied other people's work on it, but he went there. He did his own research. That's what I consider the man I want to read about it. Somebody that went to the trouble of actually getting up off his tail and going and doing something about it. It's what, there's a guy, same, I forgot his first name. His last name is Savage. And he wrote in the late 1800s. One of some of the best stuff you ever read on the South America, he wrote. He was there. He did it. He met them. He talked to them. He dug up ancient cultures. And that's the kind of what you want to read. But you choose your interest, then choose your first author, your first book. And it doesn't matter where you buy a book from me on it. You go to the library and find these things still. In fact, it wouldn't hurt to support your library just once in a while, because they're going to start disappearing if we're not careful. Because they're going to say it costs too much money pretty soon, and they're just going to start disappearing from the face of the earth. But the whole point, like I say, they want to go to the corporations are pushing you into a electronic book system, so they can control what you read, and they can stop you from reading, and they can control the flow of information. They already have control of the flow of the money. Now they want control of the flow of information. That's why you're seeing them tighten the screws down the internet. They want to control the flow of information, because with information is power. They think those guns are power. Whether the truth or the information and the knowledge is out there, and that sword of truth is going to come up and bite them in the butt. And that's what they're afraid of.
Well, that brings us to our next break. And when we come back, I want to expand on this theme by discussing the new secular priest class in its various incarnations as our intercessories to historical knowledge. And we'll be right back.
Get tired of turning on your radio, hearing all the crap from that East Coast. There's only one website that you need to know. Turn on your laptop, point click and go to Radio Free Texas. Radio Free Texas.
FloTexas.org. Float trip and the cook-off, backstage and so much more. We got all the outlaws, old and the new. Radio Free Texas, we're bringing Texas to you.
RadioFreeTexas.org. Our music's good, damn it, because it's what we do. Peace, love, and chicken grease. I'm out.
You've known from early on that being a Texan means something special. You probably even learned when you were in school that Texas had the right to make its own choices. Now, the time has come. The time to make a decision for Texas. With an oppressive federal government passing legislation for climate control, health care, bailing out banks and automakers with trillions of your tax dollars, and failing to secure our border with Mexico, it's time for Texans to take a stand. Even Texas Governor Rick Perry had this to say about the current state of affairs.
We think it's time to draw the line in the sand and tell Washington that no longer are we going to accept their oppressive hand in the state of Texas. There is a point in time where you stand up and say, enough is enough.
What do you want for the future of Texas? It's time to make a stand. Enough is enough. TexasNationalist.com.
Well, before the last break, I said that when we came back, we were going to discuss the secular priest class. So let me tell you what I mean by that. The secular priest class is basically made up of three different professions. One is government, one is media, and one is the educational system. And the reason that I call them a secular priest class is because all of what is considered to be true and whatever narrative is being pushed at any given time is being pushed by all three in a very similar way. And it's not something that they just change their mind about every week. It's a slow, linear process. And what I'd like to focus on first is the educational system. Now, in a perfect world, especially in a republic where to preserve the institutions and traditions of a republic and the way of life of free citizens in a republic, our children have to be raised up and educated in a way so as to be independent-minded and think for themselves. But I think you'd agree with me that for as long as I can remember, for sure, that has not been the case for the most part with our education system. What we're taught in the public schools and most private schools is how to obey. Do you agree with that, Ghost?
I do agree. That's why I allowed my son to quit high school and go take his GED.
Well, you know, the programming, it's very subtle, and I guess anything that starts with our kids when they're 5 or 6 years old, of course, nowadays we have Head Start that I think the kids start in that stuff as early as age 3. That's always going to be a gradual, you know, frog in a slowly boiling pot type situation, because you start getting hit with this stuff at the same time that you're learning your ABCs and you're learning how to add 1 plus 1 and come up with 2 and all that. Well, the teacher is your intercessory to knowledge in the same way that a priest in a Catholic church or an Orthodox church is your intercessory to God for forgiveness of your sins. You're never taught how to go out and do research for yourself and think for yourself. You're taught how to regurgitate what is taught to you by the teachers, and what they're teaching you is being told to them by the administrators, and what they're teaching, what they're ordering the teachers to teach is being told to them by our legislators, and what they're deciding needs to be taught is based on what corporate lobbyists and identity pressure groups pay them to teach or to order taught. And am I missing any steps in this process?
You haven't missed a one that I can think of, because they're, you're right that when I was in school, they taught us how to think for ourselves, how to use logic, why math was logic. And all the money they're throwing at it, all the buildings they're throwing at it, all the air conditioning they're throwing at it, at these schools, and all the money that's wasted for kids graduating that can't read, kids graduating that can't think for themselves. They're graduating, they don't even know how to go out and get a job. You know, and that's all they're teaching now is how to get a job. Well, I don't want my sons to know how to get a job. I want them to fend for themselves. And PBS did it years ago, did a study on it. When my father was in the eighth grade, he was always embarrassed because he never got to go to high school. But after he left the eighth grade, and 1 year later, he went into World War II. He was too young to be there, but he went anyway. And the PBS did a deal that when you finish the eighth grade in that period of time, it was equivalent to 2 years of college today. Well, that study was like 20 years ago. So it's much worse in percentages now.
Oh, of course. Think about it.
They only went to school part-time. They didn't have kindergarten. They didn't have a first grade. And when the cotton was time to pick, they weren't in school. They were out picking cotton.
Sure, and they were probably going.
The crop was time to harvest. It was time to go harvest the crop. But they learned more than our kids are today with all the money we're throwing at it and all the money we throw in football.
And did your dad go to like a one-room schoolhouse with a couple dozen students of all grades?
Many times. He went to school in Mississippi on top of that.
Yeah, well, you know.
Who has the worst rated school system in the world now?
Well, I think we finally beat him on that.
I know.
But, you know, that's a really interesting thing is that around the time of the Depression and the years leading up to World War II and all that, that generation was probably one of the best educated generations of people anywhere in the modern age. And the vast majority of them only had a few years of one-room schoolhouse-type schooling that was just as you described it, but they focused on reading, literacy, writing, arithmetic, and science. And they didn't waste a lot of time on all the garbage, the social programming, the athletics, and so many things that the money and resources are wasted on. And now we even have this abomination called Common Core, where our schools are being directed what to teach from the federal level. And it's really a terrible thing, because Common Core, the most common example of how Common Core works is if you're a student taking a Common Core math exam and the question is 2 + 2 equals blank. Well, if you say 2 + 2 equals 5, but you can show them how and why you came to that conclusion, you're correct. You get an A. It doesn't matter that the answer is 4. That they're teaching us, are teaching our kids that nothing is concrete, nothing is permanent, and nothing is sacred. If 2 + 2 is not sacred, that it ends in 4, or it equals 4, what in the world is?
George Bush was on television one night and said that same thing. That's what the world needed. He didn't ever get to impose it, but he let Obama do it for him, I guess.
Yeah, well, if I were W, I would probably feel like the world needed more exams where you can get all the questions wrong and get an A anyway. But
you just got to have a daddy with a lot of money.
Right, right. Well, you know, he was famous. I think his most famous quote that he made when he was running for governor was a reporter asked him what's wrong with the educational system, and he said, well, our children isn't learning, you know, but, you know, cheap shots at an easy target aside.
The point is that our children are being steered away from studying.
Yeah, they really isn't learning.
They're being steered away from searching out what interests them in history and spirituality or in current affairs or politics. They're steered away from doing anything other than what the adults that are in control of them say they can do, and these adults in control of them are in, by, under control of another set of adults who are under set of another. Eventually, whoever is the satanic hand controlling all this, they're all got their, they're, all of these people are marching in line telling the kids the same thing. Well, after you brainwash them for, you know, a good 12, 14 years, they're not going to be anything but the robots you train them to be. And they're not going to be able to fend for themselves. You were talking about the woman that was afraid when she came home at night? You were talking about that a minute, for a minute?
Yeah, just as an example. Yeah, let me bring that up. You know, we live in this world where reality is such a hidden thing in the shadows, and everything that we see is this manufactured illusion where we're given this illusion of a choice, and it's always a black and white choice between good and evil. There's never the fact that everything is really gray with it's never brought up, and we've been so dumbed down that that's actually an uncomfortable prospect. You know, they always present us with the false choice, the false duality. It's always, no matter what the subject is, it's either or. And what it's resulted in is this society that is so riddled with fear. And there's a lot of reason for the fear. It's just not the reasons that they give us. That they've created a world that is so spiritually bleak, and at the same time, depending on who you are and where you are, it can be so physically scary and dangerous. And I was just thinking, as an example of, you know, what do you say to a single mother, you know, with her child at home, who has to go out and do some crappy job somewhere every day and is happy to have it, and she's living paycheck by paycheck, and the only thing between her and this beast, whatever it is, that is causing all of this strife, all of this uncertainty, all of this insecurity, is just her little door to her house and her lock. The only thing that's protecting her and her child from homelessness and starvation is this job that she's got, that it's totally at the whim of the money masters and the bankers and the government people as to whether or not the situation will be amenable to her having that job next week. I don't know that there are any answers that I have to these questions, because they're, as simple as they sound, they're big questions. And if you have the empathy in yourself to put yourself in the place of a person like that, or in the place of some guy who is lucky enough to still be working a factory job somewhere, and they've broken the unions and they're bringing in foreigners and having the people who've worked these jobs their whole life train their replacements, and he's worried, and he's saying, I've got, when they let me go from here, I've got this many weeks of unemployment, and then what is my family going to do? I don't know that we have answers for these people tonight, but I think that it's real important to ask the question. You know, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I don't think we're too far away from a total collapse of the United States being the buyer nation, because the jobs are not going to be here to support it much longer. There's very few jobs that can't support the kind of buying that's required to keep this whole system going. Right now, the United States is the buyer of everything in the world, practically. We're the biggest consumer country, and we consume from every planet, every other country on Earth, while we abuse our own workers and leave them jobless and homeless. And if you don't think that's not planned, because this has been going on for, what, a good 100 years now, maybe even longer, the goal to make sure that we're brought down to the minimum wage, we're all going to be the company workers at the company farm and the company housing.
And buying from the company store.
And that's what they want. And it all goes back to the devaluation of the money back in 1913, the selling off of the assets of the United States. And you can go on and on into that stuff. That's somebody out there that is their bailiwick, and they need to get out there and find out the truth. And call us up. We'll put you on the on the radio here and let you tell us what you found out. But do you need a... That's one reason we gave you the teaser shows about the mysteries of the pyramid, because there's knowledge there that nobody's ever seen, that you've never heard about, that you might want to know about. That's the reason we told you about the international Jew and Henry Ford and his what he learned and what he found out, because you might want to know that. Somebody out there does. I know you'd drop your mouth in awe if I started going into Charles Fort and what he discovered and what he did. And I know you've all seen little things on the History Channel or the educational channels about, the frogs that come out of the sky in France every so often. It rains frogs. They get that stuff from Charles Fort. Charles Fort was the man who found out all these different curiosities around the world, and he went in to see them for himself. And he's got a 4-volume set of books that long out of print. We put them back in print, but that he goes into all these different things. His conclusion of what the human race really is after all these discoveries and chasing down all these curiosities, his conclusion was, you'll have to read the book for that one.
Well, and we'll post those books and links to those books below the player in the post with this show. And that brings us right up to our last break, and we'll be back to wrap up after this.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Ghost and I want to sincerely thank everyone who's been coming and listening to the show for spending a little time with us. We know your time is precious to you, just as ours is to us. And like we said at the beginning of the show, all we're asking you to do is just to open your mind up and consider some of the topics and concepts that we're elaborating on. And you don't even have to agree with us. Just think about it. Maybe you'll come up with your own solutions, or you'll come up with your own variations on this theme, and they may very well be better than whatever we've come up with. But I think really the important thing is the search for truth. Wouldn't you say that, Ghost?
Yeah, I'll say it again. We need the search for truth. That's the sword you want in your hand, and all the... you call them neocons earlier, I just call them cons, that beat the war path and war drums for another generation to have to listen to this crap. You know, just forget it. Go on with your studies. Go on with your learning and your research. Ignore them. They're going to do what they're going to do. You don't have to follow.
Well, and I'd just like to wrap this up by saying we've covered a whole lot of topics, and we've gone down a lot of little side trails throughout the show, and I've certainly enjoyed it. I hope the people out there have enjoyed it. There are subjects that we hit on that I'm sure in the future we'll be doing entire shows on, and I'm pretty sure that at least once we'll be doing a show on how the answer to a lot of these problems is nationalism. And we will stay on the theme. We will always hammer on the theme that knowledge and truth is the most important thing of all. And Ghost, I have to say, you are 100% correct. There is no gun. There is no bomb. There is no missile. There is no biological weapon that's more powerful than the truth in the hands of a human being who's not afraid to express it. And with that, we'd like to say good night, have a great week, and we'll see you next Saturday.